You're listening to the Build From Here podcast, a podcast for the hunter and sporting dog enthusiast alike. Join your host, Joshua Parvin, as he interviews retriever owners and discusses the trials and triumphs that lead to a great gun dog. Build From Here is presented by Cornerstone Gun Dog Academy, online resources to help you train your retriever. Now, your host, Joshua Parvin.
Welcome to another episode of the Build From Here podcast. On this episode, I'm really excited. We're doing a follow-up episode with CGA member Jake Bierenkot. And he's an incredible member. If you're not familiar with his story, you can go back and kind of hear the original story and get kind of the basis of just how he got into CGA and all that. We're going to be talking about some other things on this episode and just getting an update on where he's at. But we kind of like to do this from time to time, get an update and see how members are continuing to progress. And what we find is that every time we have these conversations is that there's usually another dog or two involved, and it just keeps progressing that way. So with that said, man, how are you doing, Jake? It's good to have you on. It's an honor to have you here, man.
Good. Thanks for having me back on again. I always love tuning into the podcast and hearing what people say. So hopefully I can offer some sound advice for people out there today.
I'm sure you can, especially with where you're at. So before we dive into where you're at and an update on your dogs and stuff, let's just get a follow up. You've been kind of busy lately. If we rewind to member weekend in the spring, a big event happened for you there, and but you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So I have Katie. I've been dating Katie for a while now, and the dogs are pretty important in her life. She got her dog Sadie right after we started dating, because she liked Slate so much and wanted a dog. And so they were always kind of important. And the first year CGA had the members weekend, we came out and have had a blast at every spring members weekend since. And just due to the fact that, you know, it's something that we have always loved. The dogs are important, and frankly, there's good photographers down there. I got in my mind the idea that I was going to propose during members weekend, and so I made it happen. I proposed the first night we were there because I couldn't stomach waiting anymore. I'm terrible at keeping like big secrets from Katie, just absolutely terrible. So I was the whole time just worried I was going to give it away. But the good news is she didn't know anything about it, and she said yes. So we got engaged at the members weekend. That was a huge fun thing, surrounded by a lot of people I've built relationships with through Cornerstone. So we did that. And then a week later we closed on a house together. That was a giant fixer upper. So, I guess we just went for it.
That's awesome. Have you, number one, that was great. It was so good that you did propose there, and that was a special moment to get to be part of. So that was fun, and it was good to see that. But, had y'all always wanted a fixer upper? Is that kind of like something that I know there's like a lot of those shows. I watch them personally. My wife and I will watch, whatever the TV shows for the houses. Is that something like you thought, or you were thinking, hey, I think we'll get a nice house, but all of a sudden it just fell into your lap? What's the story there?
I don't even know if I put an effort into it. I always thought I'd get something that I could at least fix up and make improvements, get some more equity in the house that way. I didn't know to the level of fixer-upper that I was going to get. You know, I grew up, my parents, they raised their whole house and poured a new foundation. So my dad owns a construction company, and that's what he does for a living. So, you know, you can probably guess that he has a lot of resources and had a little bit more time owning his own business. So we took on what felt like a smaller project compared to that. but it's still a pretty big one. And, unfortunately, you know, we've had those two dogs that were pretty well through the program and at a point where we were trying to maintain and just go for, you know, kind of extra credit, I'll call it. So they were a little neglected for a couple months, but I'll tell you what, it was super nice having them well trained for obedience, because we were able to, while the house was destroyed and nails and splinters and everything all over the place, we were able to throw them on their place boards and still let them out and hang out in the house, but not be a part of the dust and nails and everything. So the house is back together, the upstairs, I'll say, and we're kind of going into a normalcy here, but it'll be a good fun project that we tackle over the next couple of years.
That's awesome, man. Well, that's a new perspective. A lot of times on the Build From Here, we're kind of talking about people somewhere along the way in their journey, like they haven't finished the course yet. So that I'm excited to talk about that. And I know we've got another addition to talk about here in a little bit, but I'm really just excited to talk about that idea of, hey, you know, once you get finished the course, you know, you use the word maintaining, which is, you know, the fourth phase of learning. You're maintaining your dog's skills. You know, let's shed a little light on that for everybody. Just talk what that's been like for you. Just because a lot of people are kind of in the thick of it and they're thinking about just trying to make it to the next phase. But let's paint a little vision for what's to come for people if they will be diligent and complete the course.
Yeah. No, maintenance to me is the fun part. It's fun because you've got a dog that, like, I don't have to worry about their steadiness hunting. You know, most of the hunting's easy, and now I'm just going to get like a really cool, nice dog that you can kind of show off, and I'll call it, be a little flashy. And you know what you're saying, like progress over perfection, I feel like I got them really tuned up and really nice over last summer and into the fall. Went and traveled a little bit, went to an event at the breeder that I got them from, you know, ran really nice in front of people, won some of the events, and just felt great, right? Then we bought the house, and I neglected them for 3 months, didn't really train them, probably once. And for me, the probably toughest part of dog training is the mental aspect of progress over perfection and not looking for that robot dog or that perfect dog, or taking 3 months off. And when you go out, your inclination is, I'm going to run the same stuff that I was running before. And you do that and your dog blows up and you get frustrated because in your head, you think, you know this, I know you know this. And you can quickly get off the rails, not because it's the dog or not anything that way, just mentally or myself mentally, because I got to remind myself, hey, these dogs haven't done anything. I haven't maintained and trained them. I can't expect that they're just going to come out of the gate and do what they did 3 months ago, 6 months ago. And I got to remind myself every time that I come out and have a bad session, because I have unrealistic expectations, that it is progress over perfection. And then I come back out the next day, go for progress, not for perfection. You know, build off of, okay, this is what I know they can do. I'll supplementally add more difficulty, and training's fun. It's great. But one thing, you know, I've talked about with you, Josh, is if you strive for perfection, I think you're just going to end up disappointed. Because, you know, like, I've had the opportunity to watch like some of the really nice dogs that, like, you know, maybe at that point in time were the best in kind of the industry and the world, and they make mistakes. They're not perfect. And so, you know, by all means, don't expect your dogs to be, and don't fall into the trap like, you know, like I occasionally do. You know, you just got to remind yourself, progress over perfection.
Yeah, I feel like we all fall into that trap. That's kind of what we were talking about in the tip we did this week, just the insta-perfect world. But, you know, also there's the concept of peaking a dog. You know, you'll hear a lot of guys and running tests and running trials and stuff talk about peaking and, you know, kind of getting, you know, if you time it wrong and your dog is either has already peaked or they're going to peak at a later week, you know, peaking is that's a good example of near perfection where they're just crushing. But to maintain that 24/7 is not realistic for most people, because most people, you know, your goal isn't to have a dog that's perfect every single retrieve, every single second. It's to have a dog you enjoy and can be proud to have, and that's consistent and reliable. So, you know, I love what you're talking about there, because there is just a difference between perfection and an incredible retriever. Have you found that to be the case just in just general over the course of, yeah, how is, I asked one question, forget the question I just asked you. I want to go this direction. Just how has your perspective changed from when you were going through the course to where you're at now, where you're going through with another puppy? Because you kind of mentioned something that, you know, you got to measure your expectations, even after you've finished the course, even after you've finished training your dogs, they're fully finished. You still have to measure your expectations and keep it real.
Yeah. So like you said, so I just got a new puppy. He's he's 10 weeks old now. So it's funny, you had two yellows and you got a black. I had two blacks and now I got a yellow. And, you know, knowing what I know now, I'm a lot less concerned with getting perfection and a lot more concerned with having a dog that's excited. You know, I'm just starting place work with him, right? I'm not looking for the perfect. I don't want him to get on the board and sit and be perfect. I want him to have a good attitude and to create that good attitude and then build from there and not nitpick, you know, which will slowly, you know, pull the pieces out of him and pull the drive out of him. I'm looking to, you know, add and build on where he's at and create it from there. I think that's the biggest mental change I've had over maybe my first dog to my third dog is, you know, like with a puppy, I'm having fun. I'm not looking for perfection. I'm not looking, you know, so many people are trying to like show off their young dog and how great it is. And I'm just out there having fun with him. He's having a blast. I'm having a blast. And I think that's what's going to really create when he matures a nice dog that has style and, is really excited and biddable to do all of the work. And I think it comes from not taking it too serious when they're a puppy. You know, if I see a lot with like early retrieving, right? A lot of people start freaking out that their dog's not retrieving at a young age. And it's just like, man, I've done a couple early retrieves and they went well. So great. But like my concern for early retrieving is so small because I know like he's a Labrador, he's well bred, it's going to come. There's so many other things. And so it's a lot more relaxing training. I don't feel like my back's against the wall and that I'm behind because he's maybe not doing what people are posting their 8 week old. Like I saw someone post their 8 week old dog, you know, is sitting. And it's like, dude, I got the dog at 8 weeks. I was more concerned with making sure he's crate trained and socialized. And, you know, it's like, just don't be in a rush. And it's hard your first dog with Slate. I was in a rush. I felt like I was on a timetable to get him ready for hunting season. Right. And he was born in a time frame. He's born in May, I believe. Yeah, he's born in May. So I had a year and a half about to get him ready. I see so many people, like this young puppy that I have now was born this fall. So many people are like, I want to get that dog ready for next hunting season. Granted, it's easier when you have a dog that's hunting already to be not worried about it. But like, it's just yeah. Like, you know, with both. So Sadie is our second dog and now Rye is the puppy we have. It's just, Sadie's a much nicer dog from the standpoint of I didn't rush to get her through something because I wanted to hunt. I took my time. The first time I hunted her, you know, she was running blinds and taking casts and everything. And, you know, it just made for, you know, a nice dog. So at the end of the day, you know, it's like, I don't feel pressure. I don't feel rushed. I know things are going to come just going to follow the course, follow the program. And when things pop up, it's not the end of the world. Just take a step back and enjoy the process.
That's good. That's good. So this had just hit me. This, I've never thought of comparing it this way. And you may laugh at this, but, you know, a good dog, a well-trained dog is kind of like a good barbecue. You just can't rush it. You know what I'm saying? There's been times where I have put food on the barbecue and people are going to be there at a certain time of the day. And I go out there and start checking the temperature, you know, and it's getting close to them being here. And I realize I'm at the stall point with my meat here. and it's not going to be ready until they get here. So I start cranking it up and get it, and it, you know, it turns out okay. But then there's been times where I put it on in an ample time and it gets done and I get that thing sitting in the cooler wrapped up an hour before they get there. And that's when it turns out the best. So that's, I'm glad whatever you said made me think of that. So I'm glad you said that.
That's a perfect analogy. I have some friends who are big barbecuers and it's like, when's dinner? They just go, I don't know. Could be 6, could be 10.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah, it's like, that's a good barbecue person right there. They know what they're doing.
When's my dog going to be ready to hunt? Could be at a year or could be at 16 months or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Don't rush the barbecue to get it done.
That's right.
You'll end up making sacrifices.
That's right. That's funny.
That's funny.
But that's true. I'm really glad you said that. But it's, and I hope this is encouraging the people that are hearing this because like there is, like Jake said, there's no reason to rush, but I think maybe the reason that we want to rush is because we just want to see if we can do it. Like we want to see if it's going to work. I mean, it's proven it works. The process works. We've got many members that have gone through it. All you got to do is have blind faith that it's going to work. And if you just don't give up, you will end up there. It's like, you just got to trust that process. And it's hard to sometimes, you know, if you've never done it, it's hard to let go. I think it's more of a letting go of control thing than it is anything. Just like realizing, you know what, there's not much I can do to speed this up. Or if I do, you can end up, you can speed it up. I mean, don't get me wrong. You can speed things up. You may just make some mistakes along the way and it can be more frustrating later than if you just didn't rush it like we're talking about now. But I think that may be that. I don't know. What about for you? What do you think was causing you? Was it the desire only to get your dog out to hunt when you were kind of going through the first time feeling that pressure? Like, was other people putting the pressure on you? Where do you think the pressure was coming from for you to get the dog ready? Was it just the desire to hunt, or is it more like you're afraid it wasn't going to work out?
I think for me, it was a mix of myself and then outside influences, and myself being like, I really am competitive. Katie will tell you that. Here's a really sidetrack. Katie loves watching me golf because I suck at golf. And she says it's like one of the only things I'm terrible at.
That's great.
So I'm competitive. And like when I do something, I want to do a really good, nice job on it.
Yeah.
And so this is my first dog. I don't know what a nice dog is. So you look to like outside sources, right? You look to like, what are people posting on social media? What are other training videos doing? And you watch those, you watch people's dogs on social media and they're like, right, very much so the perfect dog. Well, it's easy. You can edit clips and not post things when your dog's not doing it right. Or like so much, the training content out there is like, let me show you how to run this drill with a dog that's obviously ran the drill before. You know, like that's like, I've watched a lot of DVDs. I've watched things and there's like an aspect where people don't want to show the struggle or show their dog because everyone wants to show that they're producing, you know, the best, right? And it's not just dog training. It's everything, right? People don't like to show kind of the in-between, right? They want to show the beginning and the end. So using like that frame of reference and thinking, okay, this is what other people are doing. This is what I need to be doing.
Yeah.
and that's where I felt the pressure. It was like, okay, my dog's here. I see other people's dogs here. Where am I missing out?
That's a big point right there too. Cause like you kind of need to do different things at different times. So if you're training how people are training with fully trained dogs with a dog that hasn't have any training, well, that's not really going to work that well. And if you've got a dog that's in the middle and you're trying to train like a dog that's just beginning, well, that dog doesn't need that either. You kind of need to be training at the right time what the dog needs. So, man, we're just bringing up some good stuff here. I'm loving this, man. You're bringing up some good content, man, for people to be here. And this is good. That's good stuff.
Yeah. No, and to be quite, you know, pointed is like, you know, I think probably when Slate was like 5-6 months, 4 months, I was just trying to do it And it was the point that 52 Plus came out, and we got to watch like you and Violet just go from raw nothing, you know, raw, just a little bundle of Violet's potential, and like watch all of it. And you call it like the trials and triumphs.
Oh yeah.
And that's what it is. Like you get to see your wins, and you, there's times where you'll feel like, man, Violet's just picking that up. Like, why doesn't my dog just pick it up that fast? But then there's times where you're like, oh, my dog is like my dog's doing this, and look at Violet. And it's just like seeing that rawness where it's like, you guys went out there, you trained, then you just posted it. Like if it went off the rails, you didn't like exclude that. And, you know, I think that was the first step where it's like, okay, this is like someone where Josh, he knows what he's doing, and his dog's doing that. Look, his dog's not perfect. I don't need to expect my dog to be perfect. And then just getting out there more and going to group training, going to like the members weekend, going to, you know, see people at kennels who have these nice dogs, you know, watching them run, because you realize what we were saying, you know, dogs aren't perfect. You know, don't compare yourself to Insta perfect, like the weekly tip. Cause you're just going to set yourself up,
yeah,
you know, to be frustrated. And, you know, that was a big thing. And after every time I come back from like the members weekend or group training, meeting up with people, I feel reinvigorated, not only because like, okay, it's like, you know, there's a point where it's like, oh, I feel good about my dogs, you know, who are finished, but then I feel like great because I get to watch other people who might have a dog at varying stages of the process kind of make breakthroughs and watch them be excited. And I'm excited. You know, it's like, I think besides, you know, there's so much advice, but like outside of just 52 plus advice is like find other Cornerstone members in the area to train with. Cause like you're going to be reinvigorated, excited to train, you know, whenever like, you know, it feels like you might be hitting your head against the wall. You get to celebrate like your wins and their wins with them. And it's the community, you know, is just another aspect that, you know, I've obviously mentioned, I think in the previous podcast, but, that make it special and make it why, you know, I've chose to have three dogs now and devote so much time to it and drive across the country to Alabama to train.
It's fun, man. The community is where it's at, and it's, and the people. And I think it's just because we got authentic people. You know, one thing we talked about is, you know, no dog's perfect, but no handler is perfect either. When you put that pressure on yourself as a handler to be perfect, you know, I feel like a lot of people struggle with this too. And at times, I think especially people that are new, they struggle with the fact that they're worried about their capabilities. They know their dog has the ability because they've bought a well-bred dog. Like they know it has potential, but they're worried about their own capabilities of actually getting their dog there. And, you know, putting that type of pressure, I've even heard people say that, yeah, you know, if, man, I know that dog could turn out, especially if I put it in the hands of a, you know, capable trainer. And while obviously that can be a good thing, there is no better trainer than the owner of the dog, because they care about that dog more than anybody. Even if somebody bred the dog, no one's going to care more about that dog than the owner of the dog, because it's their baby. It's like their dog. Let's talk about that a little bit. Did you ever have any concerns as and you may not have, just because I know you were pretty confident in following the program, but did that thought ever cross your mind? You know, you're thinking, if, you know, I just want my dog to get all that it deserves. You know, I hope I have the ability to give it what it deserves.
I don't know if like, I certainly know, like, I know my dogs. The thing I love about dogs and dog owners is everyone's dog is special, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
It's this wonderful thing, right? And so in my head, like I've got two special and three special dogs now, and they're special in different ways. But like, how can I bring out the best in all of them in the ways that they shine? And that's certainly something I thought about, you know. And I think once you go from one dog to two, you really see it and the differences between dogs and how you have to train, quote unquote, the dog in front of you. I don't think truly makes sense until you've trained two dogs.
Yeah, that's right.
Like I distinctly, you know, there's so much I remember about training my first dog. I distinctly remember like training the dog in front of you and being like, well, of course, like the dog I have in front of me, like, of course I'm going to train that dog. And then if I get another dog, I'm going to train that dog. And it didn't like sink in real, real heavy till I had pretty two polar, I won't say polar opposite, but pretty two different dogs. And then you're like, oh, I get to train the dog in front of me. And it's less like, it's not just about like, okay, if, you know, the saying, like, if you have a fast dog, go slower. If you have a slow dog, go faster. It's understanding like their characteristics, what motivates them, you know, what doesn't. And then using that too to like pull out the best in them. You know, it's like Sadie, super biddable girl. She has a point where she will like a hard no, she'll stop and be like, oh my gosh, okay, what do you want? Late. Hard no, man. Like he'll hear the hard no and he'll do the mental math where he's like, okay, is whatever happens if I totally blow Jake off worse than whatever I'm going to go do? And you can like almost sometimes see him thinking, right? And so I got to think about different things with him and Sadie to pull out the best in them. So I've never really had the fear that I wasn't going to pull out the best in them. I think now I might, now that I'm thinking of it and you brought it up, I'm thinking like, am I getting the best of my dog? You know, it was more like, you know, it was more the drive to how can I get the best out of them? Not, you know, am I not going to get the best? But I
think that's the right perspective to you. And that's what I was hoping you would say, something along those lines. And everyone knows that we don't rehearse a Build From Here podcast, nor do we even have a cheat sheet for what we're doing. So this is all completely raw. But that was what I was hoping you would say, is something along those lines. Cause I hope people are encouraged to realize that, you know, don't be thinking that way. Don't be thinking that it ain't going to work out. Think that you ask the right question. How can I do it? You know, how can I get my dog? How can I help it reach its potential? And I'm a firm believer, just because how many people I've seen train their dogs using our course, that I think really anybody can do it if they want to and they have that type of attitude. And your attitude is the key there. And you have the right attitude. It's, hey, I'm determined. We're going to make this sucker happen. How can I do it? And that's it.
Yeah. No, and I think you mentioned, you know, it's like the potential, right? What's the potential? Like the great thing is beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, it's like you see different things. You have like the hunt test standards and the SRS and all these things. And there's people who like, sometimes I feel like they have a lesser dog or a lesser, you know, they make it seem like, oh, I've just got a dog that does this. Even though that's what, you know, that's what they want, right? They don't,
right.
They're not like ever, like, let's say you never field hunt and you just hunt a small pond or body of water. Like for you to go out and practice 300 yard blinds, it's like, I think probably frankly, if you're talking for practicality, you're probably like wasting some of your time unless that's what you want to do for a hobby, right? If your whole focus is like, how can I get the best duck dog for how I hunt? You know, you determine how you hunt and what's your goal for a dog and what's a good dog for you, because it varies so much, you know, like not just like locally where and how you hunt, you know, it's just like from person to person, you know, you are going to have your preferences for how you want your dog to be, and value that over like, this is the quote unquote standard set by outside, you know, organizations that you know don't you know, and maybe dictate, right? Like, I'm not going to get into the whole hunt test thing and everything, but like hunting is a little bit different than hunt test. So depending on what you want, like my point is, you set the goals and you set what's a nice dog. Like, don't let the outside world do that for you.
That's right. I mean, yeah, I mean, everybody, and the hunting is totally different, and that's a fun game to play. But I mean, the calling in our duck blinds, man, we got like two or three people screaming on those calls. So it ain't no one little mat, shoot three marks. It's we're screaming, we're calling them all the way in, and we're all shaking in there. And then you got these ducks coming in. All of a sudden, we're sling. You know, I've gotten better at my shooting, thankfully, in time. At least I'm probably pretty sloppy on it right now. I haven't picked it up since last season, but you know, but there for a while, we were shooting a lot. You know, we got to make sure those birds hit the ground. And there's, and that's one thing I think a lot of people don't practice a lot of too, is, you know, once you can go watch some of the CGTV episodes and you'll see once some of those birds are hitting the water, and this is going to happen on any hunt, if a bird is still alive and it has the potential to get away and it's within range, I mean, the goal is to shoot it again so that it doesn't have to get away. Preferably the dog doesn't have to chase it down, because if the dog has to go way out there, we're spending more time. At least that's the way we're hunting. You know, I'm going for efficiency so we can get more birds. You know, how quickly can we clean up so that we can get more birds? So, and you know, let's talk about that for a minute, because I love the point you brought up that you should train for how you're going to hunt. Now, in your case, you have a little bit of a unique situation, because you're going to hunt in lots of different scenarios. You're going to travel a little bit. You're not necessarily going to hunt the same hole all year long. So you kind of have to be prepared for, you know, really whatever might come your way. What's been the preparation like for you on that? And you know, let's run through a little bit of that. And then I want to dive back into some of this puppy stuff with your new dog, Rye.
Yeah. So I always, my mentality has been, you know, so like, at least in my experience, hunting a dog out of an elevated mow marsh in like water or something like that has been, I'll call it like on a steadiness level and everything that way, like the easiest, right? The dog's elevated, there's physical water. You know, steadiness to me is like when I look at concerns, and like circling back to like what you want for a dog, like my baseline, if I don't care whose dog I'm hunting with, but like a steady dog and quiet, I'll say I like a quiet dog, but a steady dog, like that's the baseline for what I want to hunt with. And so when I first, you know, maybe come out this late summer, fall, I go to test steadiness and make sure they're going to be steady. And so what I like to do is I like to put them in ground blinds where there's not that like barrier of height difference. They're essentially laying on the ground. And in my experience, that's like the most tempting for them to want to creep or break. And so I test them. I get on the calls. I yell, like, cut them. You know, I try to do and recreate a little bit of the chaos of the hunt, because hunting like gets chaotic and Western, you know? So I try to create that. That's my first goal, is just like make sure the dogs are steady. And then from there, you know, it's getting them used to different types of decoys, land, you know, on land, on water. I've hunted a lot out of like A-frames with dog blinds. I really am a big proponent of dog blinds. There's some people, like even when you're backboarding laying in the spread, they don't like dog blinds because they think the blind kind of sticks out. I've put decoys over the dog blinds and have had luck with that. But I just, you know, when we've traveled to different places, I've gone to Kansas where they did backboard hunt and they didn't want dog blinds. I just set up a bunch of decoys and mock the hunt up and do my best and do that multiple times. You know, and if I go to a new place and I think it's going to be hunting differently than, my dogs have in the past, I set it up. And, you know, you get to a point where like I've never hunted the dogs in an A-frame blind. I've always put them in their own blind. While I was in Texas and they wanted the dogs in the A-frames looking out. Well, they've been in so many different scenarios in training and everything that it was easy for them. You know,
that's good.
Kind of teaching that, but it's I think due to the fact of, you know, really trying to show them the variety of setups, setting them up on, you know, so many people just run their dog from their left side, right? Well, like in a hunting, you know, you might run your dog from the right side because you have a buddy running your dog on the left side. You know, switch things up. Because they're not going to be like as nice and neat. Put the dog behind you instead of to your side all the time. And just work on different scenarios that way, because There's absolutely been times where I've gone out to the blind and my plan for how I was going to set up was completely just wrong. And if, you know, if I had a dog that only got set up that one way, you know, it would throw him out of whack. And so just change it up, try to recreate the chaos. And, you know, one thing I always think is funny is, so I took Slate out, and it's the little things you don't think about so much of dog training that makes your life easier. And one of them was like, you know, so I went out and I set up decoys in the water and everything. What I didn't do was I didn't throw the decoys out in the water while he was out, you know, on the place board. I threw them out and then got him out. Well, you know, like that's one thing I learned is because then when we're on our first hunt and I'm throwing a bunch of things in the water and they're splashing, he's like amped to the peak because he thinks like he's going to have 12 retrieves out there that's to go awesome. Pick up. You know, so like all the things you don't think about while training, you don't think about because you're so focused on the function of the dog, like going out, coming back with the retrieve. During the hunting, like all those other things get brought in, you know, getting set up at 3 a.m. and now your dog has to sit in a place for 2 hours or 3 hours till it gets sunlight. Those are all things that are hard to think of beforehand because there's so many, but if you can try to throw all those at your dog in a controlled situation, when you get into like the uncontrolled situation, it just, they know what to do and it makes it easier.
Yeah. That's fantastic advice. Well, we're going to rewind now to Puppyville since you see, we're all over the board here. We got older dogs, yeah. We got fully trained dogs, and now we got a puppy. Talk to me about this, your hopes for this puppy and, how old is Raya right now?
He's 10 weeks. Okay. We got him 3 weeks ago, and I don't know, like back to like that standpoint of, I feel like I've relaxed a little bit more into it. I don't like, my hopes are no different than the hopes with my dogs is that I can just take it to its potential in my mind, you know, where I want them to be a nice hunting dog that's quiet, and calm in the blind, but then can turn it on in, you know, during the retrieves. And take nice casts and nice lines out. It's just that, like, I don't have a particular, like, I'm going to get this dog, you know, I might play around in the test game with him just to see, you know, that to me, that's more like self-validation than I'm a dog. I want to prove it to myself yeah. that I could do that if I wanted to. But, you know, it's really just have fun with him and make a nice hunting dog. I've got to the opportunity to go to some different mock British field trials over here in America, and you know, it's kind of made me realize like that's the style of hunting dog. I kind of realized it before from watching them, but it's just really, I'll say, solidified that's the style of dog I want. A dog yeah. that, you know, is quiet and calm on the line and can watch a bunch of birds get shot. A dog that can be switched maybe from seeing this mark and marking that to then there's a blind over here, so that style. And so that's going to be, I think, more of my goal, is getting a dog that's nice like that, that fits more of the British standards.
Let's talk about that for a second too, because yeah. I love that style. Obviously we've got a lot of right. our roots in that, but I think a lot of people who listen to this may not fully understand British versus American. And so like American, you know, style training, typically like, let's just say hunt test, you know, you're rolling. It's typically one guy running most of the time, except for the honor. And, you're going to do 3 marks and a blind. Okay. And then you do your deal. You do diversion. This is for finish. And then you're done. British styles. Okay. What I love about this is you're constantly working your dog. And everyone else is constantly working their dog. You're running 10 to 12 dogs on what we call a line. So think of a big field and you're doing like a walk-up scenario. What's so strong about this is these dogs are, number one, not trained with e-collars. And number two, you're not allowed to use a slip lead while you're in the actual trial itself. So all these people are walking with their dogs are healing perfectly. They're stopping when they stop, or if they're not healing perfectly, they're out. But stopping when they're stopping, and then you're shooting, birds are flushing, and then it's chaos. Boom, 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 boom. Birds are getting shot, and they'll call the number, and then the handler, with, let's say you're number 5, handler number 5, pick the bird on the left. It will go and pick that bird up in front of all the other dogs, and all the other dogs have to honor and be steady and quiet while that dog's working. So that's kind of the British style. And both are difficult in their own aspects, in their own ways. But I would say without question, obedience-wise, the British style of training is the cream of the crop. It's going to be the most difficult to achieve that level of obedience if you're not training for it, if you're only training a certain style. You got thoughts on that? Kind of, is that your opinion?
Yeah. I think that's my opinion. And I think it mimics the chaos of the hunt, because you're actually literally hunting on that line, right? You're flushing birds and you're shooting them. And, you know, it's way different than a hunt test. It's less about precision and control. That's a huge aspect. You need your dog under control and obedient, like you said. But there's a lot of retrieves where you got to push your dog into an area and then you can't see him, or you don't know where the bird is. You might have a 25-yard idea of where it is, and you need to push the dog to that area, give him the hunt whistle, and let him hunt. Well, like the problem I've always had, and when I run a dog in a hunting scenario, is like, I don't mark the bird perfectly, right?
Yeah.
I'm shooting the bird. I see it start to fall. And I go to the next bird as soon as I see that bird start to fall, right? So I'm not marking where it fell. I have an idea. If I have a dog that's so used to running straight lines and the exact cast and doesn't understand the hunt, where I can get them to the area and say, you know, give them the hunt whistle and let them hunt, I'll be screwed. I'll just be ping ponging a dog out there all day.
You need a dog that can think for itself a little bit,
right?
And that's one of the British styles too. And people that are listening to this can go, if you have the opportunity, or you can buy the DVDs from Paul French or whatever. But the IGL, I mean, some of these retrieves, like, they're casting the dog on verbal cues only. Okay. So like, when the dog goes over the hill out of sight, they blow the whistle, the dog stops, and you can watch it on the video. The dog is stopping and it's listening to its handler give it a cue to either go left, right, or back, and they can't even see it. And so that's an extreme example. I don't know that you're going to see a lot of that in American style hunting if you're ever here in a duck blind, although I have seen some of that on the hunts we've been on. But like what you're saying is, you need a dog that can think for itself a little bit, you know, not completely independent. You need a dog that will be biddable to the handler, but you also need your dog to, like, it needs to realize, hey, and I'm not a robot. You know, I got to do my job. The handler's got to do their job, and we're going to work as a team to get there.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, you know, that's kind of, I think, when I look at what I want with a puppy, number one, like obedience, right? That's, I'm focused on not just the training. I'm focused on outside of the training. How am I going to set up this dog's life so I get what I want out of it? And it's, you know, it comes down to, I think, you know, regimenting things. So like when I feed him, when I let him out of the kennel, when I let him out of a door, when I do all these little things, I'm not just letting him bust through. I'm making him be calm. You know, at this point, I'm not, like, he doesn't know sit, right? So I'm not making him sit before I let him eat, but I'm wanting him, you know, he gets really jacked up, excited. I'm not giving him the food till he's calm,
right?
Until he understands. And I think that, you know, gets into a bigger function of, you know, I feel like personally with a lot of people whose dogs are always bouncing off the walls, it's emotional intelligence, maybe not the right word, but you didn't give them as the puppy the understanding of how to control themselves and that bottled up excitement feeling. And that's kind of, you know, that's a big part of, I'm not training all day, right? But I'm incorporating the aspects and my expectations of training into the life of the dog,
right?
And so, you know, that's really the big thing, and I think being consistent with that, and you know, just taking the time. Sometimes it's a pain, you know, you're trying to get out the door and you got to slow down and take 5 seconds. You know, I'm horrible about that kind of stuff typically. Like and my parents drove them nuts when I was growing up in the house. So like, instead of hanging my coat I'll just like put it right next to the hanger or whatever. Just cause like, it's like, oh, there's, I'm done with that now. I get to move on to what I want. Cause I'm thinking like 10 things ahead of what I'm even doing. Well, it's like with a dog, you know, I have to tell myself like, it's not, slow down. It's fine. And not just with the puppy, you know, it's like, don't just go out there and go through the motions to go through the motions and train.
Right.
Go out there and, you know, take your time and be intentional. One thing I have started doing is like in the mornings, if I'm training, I'll take off my watch and leave my phone on silent because like, I don't need to know what time it is within reason. You know, I don't need to know what time it is. I don't need to feel pressed like, oh, I need to get this done so I can get back to the house, or like be distracted from my notifications. Like I need to be present in that moment so I can be mentally there, because someone said once when I was out and about, and I really liked it, was they said like dog training is a mental game. And if you're training your dog for a longer period of time, you know, your mind should be tired, right? Because you should be thinking the entire time you're doing it. And that's just, you know, a big thing that I try to do. And I try to eliminate a little bit of all the distractions we have by, you know, taking off my watch and taking off and putting my phone on silent so I can be there.
That's a strong and good tip. And, I think a lot of people struggle with that too. And like, I mean, it doesn't seem like it'll make a difference, but it does. You know, being distracted for 1 second means if you're in actual training, like if you're in your formal training and you get a text that comes through and your dog's looking up at you and you miss that moment, you've missed the moment of connection. And it makes a difference. It makes a difference for how much your dog responds to you.
It's also like a split second of like your dog's on the rails. Like there's, so I went to this thing this year where both the dogs I was running, like perfect line out there. I was like, they've got it in the bag. I did it once where I turned around to talk to the people behind me. And I looked back and he's like, boom, right? Like, just like off into somewhere where if I was paying attention, I could have stopped him, casted him back. But I took my attention away for 3 seconds. He was like way out of the area and it was like dysfunctional, right? You think I would know better. So when I'm running Sadie this time, I line her. She's perfect. I'm like, oh, she's got it. Before she picks it up, I turn around and do it again. And what does she do? She's like, same thing, off in the weeds. And it's like how quickly it can go off the rails if you're not paying attention, you know, and thinking ahead of your dog. You know, those are the moments where it, you know, can be decisive of, did I catch it before it goes off the rails? And was it a learning moment? Or did I like, did it just completely go off the rail because I was distracted? And now, you know, it's like, I'm trying to get the dog back and you know, regroup.
That's right. That's power. That's good, man.
It's no different than like when I ran Violet, right? We switched.
That was funny.
It's like, you know, like with Violet, it's like, you know, Slate is a little bit, he's the truck is what we always describe him as. And so I have some reaction time there, right?
Oh yeah.
Or it's like especially with the people who have like the sports car dogs, right? Like you don't have much reaction time. So if you're not devoting all of your, you know, mental capacity to thinking about that dog and watching and being ready to intervene when you need to, you know, like you're going to be behind the eight ball.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't take long. I mean, it's even, yeah, she's like that overdrive horsepower. You just get that sucker loaded up and need a little traction control. Sometimes we have to work to turn that traction control on, and it comes in handy when we got it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
No, but I know that was a long winded answer getting back to the puppy, but, you know, it's just really right now, I really haven't thought about the end. I'm just thinking about like right now, of like, I've got the puppy in front of me. This is what I want in the dog. And because it's a puppy and it's cute, I'm not going to like let it get away with murder, right?
Right,
I'm going
to
keep my expectations. And I want, you know, to instill, you know, my expectations and the standards for the dog now and carry it out.
That's good. I have no doubt that pup's going to turn out well. Sadie and Slate have both turned out as incredible dogs. You could basically take them anywhere, hunt them anytime, and they're going to do good. They're going to pick up your birds, and they're not going to be a pain. They're not going to make it. They're going to actually make the hunt more enjoyable because you got them there. And in fact, at least when I've been around them, you almost forget they're there. They're just laying down on their cots, and you forget they're there. They're just hanging out, waiting to be told what to do. And that, I think it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, I feel like you've developed some incredible dogs. So I look forward to seeing Rye and seeing how you continue to develop that puppy. I think it's going to go well. Well, let's talk about two things or one thing here before we wrap up, and then we'll just kind of get one final thing from you. But so for those that are listening to this, if you're listening to this in the month of October, you know that Jake is a CGA ambassador, the first CGA ambassador. We're proud to have you as ambassador, man. Number one, getting after it, leading the charge well. What's what does it mean to you being a CGA ambassador? You know, obviously there's a history here. You've got a long story with being with us, and so we're just proud of you, man. Proud of you.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, from that standpoint, you know, it makes me feel a little bit proud of myself and special, just from the standpoint of like 52 plus and everything, was great. But if you put yourself out there and, you know, make connections with people and, you know, go to members weekends and go to group events and do that, like, not only are you going to have a really nice dog, but it opens up your world to so many, new and cool things. You know, if you asked me before I got Slate, if I thought I'd be having a third dog and being on podcasts and being in videos and that stuff, it wasn't even a life that I ever wanted or expected, but just from putting yourself out there and meeting with people and, you know, just having a good time, you know, it's really been cool. You know, a lot of the people I stay in touch with on a day-to-day basis are people I've met through Cornerstone and through training dogs. And, you know, it's pretty special that way from the standpoint of like, you've got a common group that you all have like common goals, common methods. And it just like makes things a lot of fun because you lose all that chaff of when you go to, like, I've been to hunt tests, and this is not a hunt test thing. This is the people at the hunt test. I've had a great time at HRC stuff. And everyone, like, I've watched and been the subject of like going to these events and like six people telling me, this is what I need to be doing. And all six advice is different. And like, you're a novice and you're trying to figure out and pick it. And so like what I hope to be for a CGA ambassador for people is like a voice where it's like, okay, take a step back, relax. Number one, have fun with it. You know, this is not our day jobs. This is not something that you need to be performing at. This is something that like you're doing because you like and love hunting. You wanted a dog and you wanted a special relationship with your dog. And if you just sit back and, you know, rest on the core values, you know, of what we're trying to achieve or what Cornerstone is trying to achieve, and just follow the course, you're going to get there. And don't kind of like, you know, don't get distracted by the million advice out there, because probably like 75% of it's bad advice, you know, like,
that's true.
I don't know if I answered the question, but I'm just happy to be an ambassador because it was hard when I first get started, and, you know, it gets easier as you go and as you know things you didn't even know you didn't know. But hopefully, you know, through these podcasts and different things, I can make it easier on someone, because there are so many people while I was coming up who made it easier for me. So just really hopefully you can give it back that way, and just people can have, you know, help people have more fun and build a deeper relationship with their dog.
That's awesome, man. Well, we're proud of you. We're proud to have you as an ambassador. Feel like you embody CGA extremely well. And CGA is more of an idea than it is even an organization or anything like that. And that idea is that, you know, happy, confident retrievers that you can be proud to have in the blind, and happy, confident handlers, right? And you're happy, you're confident in your dogs, and that's what we want to see other people get to. Because, on the opposite end of the spectrum, we don't talk about it a lot, but you could be frustrated with your dog. You could be not happy because you don't have what you're looking for, or it's just not turning out. And we want to help people avoid that. And so we are proud of you for just being a beacon that, hey, here's what's possible. This is what you can do with your dog. As we kind of wrap this up, and we'll do some more. I mean, we'll do updates in the future. We got to hear more about Rye. We got to hear more about that journey of how you're trying to develop this dog into kind of more the British style, the British, so to speak, and just a good calm retriever. What's kind of your updated thoughts for people that are thinking about getting on the journey, if there are any updated thoughts?
Yeah, so I've kind of like engulfed my whole world into the retriever training, and with that, like, I've went out there and I've looked at other things, other courses out there, just for curiosity, and hey, just to see what's out there. Is there something I don't know? And I've spent quite a bit of money doing that for my curiosity's sake. And every time I come back to, like, the program is the best program out there. And, I think I'm just putting words in your guys' mouth now, maybe. I think a large part of that is because you look at other programs out there and they're run by people who are owning professional kennels, and that's their day business. And this is something they started because they saw a fit or wanted to get into it. And there's worlds a difference between the two, because you've got full-time people. You guys stopped the kennel that you guys are running to do this. And just the level of content you have, how well it's produced, the level of community and support, and just the entire picture, you can't do and be sidetracked by it. Like, what you've built, you guys have to be fully invested in, and you are. And I think after all of that, it is the best, technically speaking, it is the best, most comprehensive program when you don't even factor in the community, which is a really tough thing to like quantify, right? Yeah. I've said, like, a lot of my adult friendships that I hold near and dear have come from the CGA community and dog training through that. And so, like, I don't know how to quantify that, but I don't know where my life would be, 5 years ago going back if I chose a different route. And I don't think I'd be, where I'm at today with it. So.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. We appreciate that, man. And glad you chose to go along with us, and glad you continue to go along with us and continue to support the mission of helping people have a better experience with the retriever. That's what it's about. And the relationships that you develop along the way. And that's really, I mean, the retrievers are great, but the relationships are really, really what it's all about. And every time we do a member weekend or gathering or anything like that, it's, it's just top notch. The people are just absolutely incredible. So we appreciate you, man. Thank you for hopping on again. And I look forward to doing another update in the future. Hopefully, maybe we can get a hunt together this winter. We'll see you navigating with the baby on the way, but we'll see what we can do. But man, again, it's an honor to have you. And again, I think you embody just the attributes of what we hope for all CGA members, and that's just being confident and just being good at what you do. Not only just being confident, but being good at it and being committed to the process and committed to your dogs. Because when you're diligent like you've been, it just pays off. You just have good dogs. If you put in the work, you're going to get the return, man. And that's what you've done. So,
yeah. Thank you for having me out here and on again. It's always great. And one last thing I'll say is, a part of, in my mind, being an ambassador is really being there for people who are a part of the program. And so I would say you can find me on the Facebook group, on social media. If you ever find yourself beating the head against the wall, I've probably been there and beat my head against the wall, and someone, gave me some sound advice that made my life way better. And so I'd say to you, if you're at that stage, reach out, and we'll get you through it.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Build From Here podcast. To learn more about retriever training or our podcast, visit cornerstonegundogacademy.com/podcast.